This is Talking with the Gravy Train on Ski Tracks, the latest in Nordic ski talk and news. And now your host, Peter Graves.
Hello again, everybody. It's another edition of Talking with the Gravy Train. I'm Peter Graves, and our special guests today are the husband and wife team of Brian and Caitlin Gregg. They're on the phone live with us from Minneapolis. And Brian, we'll start with you. What an exciting season for you both, and of course, Caitlin with that bronze medal at the World Championships in Falun. That was icing on the cake, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. It was fantastic to see that, especially knowing how much hard work she's put in and for how long she's been putting in that hard work. She struggled with some success over in Europe, and to see that really pay off is really, really cool. You know, in 2007, it was, well, I wonder, maybe she's too old for that success over in Europe. And to be able to do it 2015, what is that, 8 years later, is pretty cool.
It's very cool. Amazing, really. So you were an All-American at college, and I think you completed your career out of UAA. You were born in Denver and moved to the Metau Valley. Was it in the valley there, Brian, that the bug of cross-country skiing bit you?
For sure. I was really fortunate. The Metau Valley is a beautiful place. If anybody hasn't skied there, it's the largest cross-country ski resort in North America with over 200 kilometers of trails, pretty much groomed daily. It's a beautiful place. The reason it's almost so beautiful is it's really kind of hard to get to, but it's worth it once you're there. And I think what was fantastic is that beautiful area really attracted some wonderful coaches and mentors. Leslie Thompson, now Leslie Hall, Laura McCabe, Chris Clark, or Flash, Scott Johnston. So a lot of really, really great coaches and mentors that made cross-country skiing fun for me and made working hard and doing intervals also very fun. And it sort of opened my eyes to that idea. Laura McCabe was training for the 98 Olympics while I was in junior high. She would do a lot of her training with us, usually beating us, of course. And that really opened the eyes to, you know, this is something that isn't just somebody that I see on television. This is, you know, this is Laura, and although she is quite incredible, this might be something that I could do. She's doing this here in a small town in Washington, and I think that really caught on that bug. We had three of the members of the team in Sochi were from the Metau with myself and Eric and Sadie Bjornsson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing program, and it continues right now to turn out a lot of good young athletes for the future as well. So, Brian, I want to ask you a little bit about Team Gregg, which I think started in 2014. What was the genesis of that, and how did it come to be?
You know, the Caitlin and I we got married in 2011, and leading up to the Olympic year when we got married in 2011, Caitlin had just made the 2010 Olympic team, and she knew that the Olympics were a huge goal of mine. And I was close to making the 2010 team, but not that close. It wasn't a sad day when I wasn't named. It was expected, really. And she sort of sat down and said, "Hey, you know, let's really focus on." Putting you on that 2010 Olympic team and helping you realize those dreams. And so we moved to Minneapolis, Minnesota, where she had been training for the 2010 Olympics. And we bought a little house here. We bought a little house for $25,000, mm-hmm. Which is just a great central base for us and allows us to be on the road and traveling so much without having to pay rent at another place. Mm-hmm. And we just really focused on the training and racing, and we felt like there were certain areas that we needed to improve the quality. And so, you know, over time, you feel like, hey, I want to have a little bit more control over the quality and everything like that with the training. And so we created Team Gregg as sort of the two of us supporting each other, and we were working with other teams. We were working, you know, with CXC and with a team out of the Metau Olympic Development Project, And it just sort of came together that the best scenario for us was to work together as Team Greg. And, you know, a lot of it's a family-oriented business in the sense that, you know, my mom is sewing on the patches onto our uniforms, and my brother's helping us to, you know, with travel logistics and doing splits. And, you know, my sister's out there on the course, you know, radioing splits from my brother. And it was really sort of a team affair, and we're lucky enough to share the same last name as a married couple. So we just sort of went like, oh, let's call it Team Greg, and it just kind of took off from there.
Yeah, it's really cool, the sort of synergy about having, it's really a family business, a family operation. And so you guys have sponsors, and you also solicit donations and things like that. I'm going to guess, but I don't want to put words in your mouth, Brian, that having Caitlin's medal this year probably is going to be helpful in raising badly needed funds.
You know, I have to be honest, Peter, I didn't catch all of your question because our connection's a little bit off. Would you mind restating that again?
No, certainly. I hope you can hear me now. So I guess the question is, with Caitlin's medal this year, things ought to, I would guess, look up in a good way for possible fundraising and donations and things like that for the next winter.
Most certainly. The medal this year is really, you know, we have some fantastic supporters and many people that have believed in us. And it's one thing to go out and say, you know, we're training for this medal, but also to go out and to win that medal really helps validate that support and opens up some more doors with them. We are still working on securing a title sponsor for the two of us. That's been really incredible. We've really you know, relied on a lot of our sponsor support and community donation support. And so we really try to maximize each dollar that is donated, and we have really good cost savings and sort of cost control on that. But we are really looking forward to expanding. I think our budget we sort of ran out was about $25,000 this last year each.
Yeah.
And so it's pretty incredible that we're able to do what we've done with that, and it's sort of that incredible thought of what could we do with just a little bit more?
Yeah.
And so we are really, really excited about the opportunities with that, and certainly having the Olympian accolade next to each of our names has been helpful, and bronze medalist at the World Championships is certainly helpful as well.
Could you ever see a time, Brian, where you might add another athlete or two to the Team Greg concept going down the road?
Yes. We're certainly open. The Team Greg name was a little bit of sort of for fun when we first started, but we would like to have other athletes. My sister's already married, my brother as well. So Caitlin got in through marriage, but we could probably expand the team with that. We have, you know, a large group here that we train with in the cities, as far as adding either an additional athlete, and we've also talked about adding an additional sort of administrative or technician support as well.
Well, what you've done is remarkable to me, and I think you deserve an awful lot of credit to you both, and I see you around the country, and you're, you know, take. Well, Brian, at this time, if I can I bring in Caitlin to the conversation?
Yeah, let me just hand the phone over to her. Right. Here, she's at her desk right now, writing out our training plan for this next season. So
okay,
here she is.
Brian, thank you so very much.
Hi, Peter. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you, Caitlin. Nice to talk to you. And you probably heard some of the discussion I had with Brian. And one of the questions I was wanting to ask you is, I don't know if you have a coach that you work with, or do you guys sit down together because you have a lot of knowledge, the two of you? Do you kind of come up with your own training program?
Yeah. So I, you know, one thing that I've learned since my college days and working with Sten Feldheim up at Northern Michigan University is that, you know, really to be, you know, back then I was, obviously a student athlete, and, but Sten really encouraged all of us athletes to become students of the sport, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so he really spent a lot of time teaching us sort of the reasons behind why we train a certain way and what the, you know, what the goals of all of our training, you know, sessions are. And so that really, you know, my degree wasn't in sports science, but I definitely felt like I, you know, had a number of books on sports science and read a lot. And always try to stay up to date on different studies and different training methods that are maybe up and coming or new. And so for me, you know, now I've had about 15 years of experience working with a number of different coaches and found a lot of different programs that have worked for me. And I'm sort of at the point now where all of that experience lets me combine sort of the best of all of them. And so, you know, at this point, you know, Sten always told us that it's very common in other parts of the world for athletes to actually write their own training.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually ran into Vegard Ulving after the day after my bronze medal performance, and we were talking to him and, you know, kind of shared that I write the training for Brian and myself, and he was quite happy and said that, you know, he did that throughout his entire career, and he thinks
that,
wow, you know, one of the most important parts of being an athlete is understanding why, you know, why you're doing what you're doing. And so he complimented us on that. And yeah, so I obviously have some great guidance from Piotr Benarski at Moffitt Nordic Racing, and you know, Brian and I bounce some ideas off of each other. But it's been fun to be able to take control and put forth a plan that I believe in.
Yeah, but I mean, that's fascinating to me. So how do you think now you've maybe modified or adapted your training? And I really, you know, I'm thinking about both of you now as you move along in this career. Has your training approach changed much from, say, 5 years ago to now?
Did my training approach change?
Yeah, I mean, maybe not approach, but are you doing something different now that you didn't do before?
Oh. Yeah, you know, to be honest, because I've changed programs a few times, and, you know, when you're with the program, you know, different coaches have different, just different ways that they organize training, and, you know, one thing is that, you know, when we were with CXC, you know, there was individual training plans, but, you know, there was kind of a general theme and a general kind of layout that we all were following. And so now with a little more independence and the ability to write our own programs, we can really hone in on I guess the biggest difference I would say is that very, very individualized approach where, mm-hmm. you know, I can really make sure I'm getting, you know, I'm getting the plan, the program that fits me well. If I had to really say specifically what's different, I would say that, again, I have been using a lot of the training methods that I know came from Sweden. I worked with a coach and, a number of coaches, actually, when I was racing biathlon internationally, and I really enjoyed following that plan and following that program, and felt that it really prepared me well for the race season. And so I've communicated with those coaches some in the past couple of years, and really kind of looked to those outlines that they, you know, that we talked about back then, and kind of based my training around that. So I would say the biggest difference is it's a pretty high volume approach, but also a very high intensity approach.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that each athlete, one of the best things, you know, when you're coaching anybody, whether it's yourself or whether it's your husband in my case, is to know the athlete really well and to understand that each person responds differently to all different types of training. And so I really was able to sort of find the training that I responded the best to, and that approach, high volume and high intensity, seems to work the best for me.
Yeah, that's interesting. So do you guys do much or a lot of your training or a great percentage of your training together?
You know, that's funny. We actually don't.
Okay.
I mean, we might do a little bit of distance training from time to time, and we might do we might, you know, I might try to stay on Brian for an interval here or there. Mm-hmm. You know, and he calls it wife training. He might have a very, very easy recovery workout and come with me.
Yeah.
But our paces are quite a bit different, and we try to make sure that we're both getting the workout that we have planned in. So mm-hmm. we do something called trailheading, and what that means is we might drive and park at the same location and have, you know, leave from the same spot and have a similar route. But oftentimes, you know, our amount of training for the workout might be the same too. So say we have a 2-hour distance session, we might go out and, you know, each go our own paces and then meet back up in 2 hours. And
mm-hmm.
yeah. And so that's, I guess to answer your question, we don't train side by side, but we do train together.
Yeah.
At least for the first maybe minute.
I gotcha. Yours is an interesting story too. I think you moved from New York to my home state of Vermont when I think you were 10 years old. You've been an Olympian. You've been a 3-time Berkey champion, I believe. I know you've won at least 4 national titles, maybe more. You know, it being staying with this sport, and I think it's one of the lessons a lot of us learned from Keegan too. Staying with this sport for you has been a real precursor to the kind of results you're producing now. You've got a lot of experience physically. You've got an enormous base. When you add that together, it's a very powerful combination.
Yeah. I believe you said that I have a lot of experience, and that's what sort of could lead one to have the results that I did.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, exactly. I think that one of the keys from this past, you know, year, and you know, if you look at my World Cup profile, you'll notice that I don't really have very many World Cup starts compared to, you know, obviously a lot of my international competitors, but even a lot of the other U.S. women who are, you know, consistently over on the World Cup. I mean, I think I might have about, you know, a quarter to a third of just the pure number of, whether you want to look at it as opportunities or just learning, you know, exposure. But I will say that for sure, the one thing I've learned is every time I get to the start line at any of those events, it's a learning experience. And, you know, one thing that I definitely realized this year and kind of came for a lot from, you know, watching the team have so much success over there and listening to the girls, and especially this fall when I was there not racing so well, was this idea that, you know, a lot of it comes from a confidence and kind of a reassurance that you belong there and that, you know, you're doing things right and you could, you know, potentially be on the podium at any time and, you know, any race. And so I really think that that's a big trend we're seeing in U.S. skiing right now. And, you know, all of us, you know, whether we're racing on the World Cup or back here at U.S. Nationals, you know, we're not immune to that excitement that we see when we hear good results from world, you know, a World Cup or World Champs. And I think that for me, exactly like you said, it just took a little bit longer for me to kind of get comfortable and feel like, okay, I can do this and kind of have that bank, if you will, of results and that bank of experiences to draw from and cash in at a pretty awesome, opportune moment.
Absolutely. And, of course, you and Jesse Diggins made history for the United States in Falun this winter. It was incredible for all of us in America to wake up and either watching it early on the Internet or, of course, just hearing about it. It was a fantastic day. Take me back there a little bit to maybe your thoughts on the day as you were out there racing and then the wonderful outcome.
Yeah, so I was really methodical when I decided, you know, I was going to solely focus on that 10K race. And when I found out I made world champs, I wrote to the coaches and said, okay, I'll be ready for that 10K. They had, you know, they'd given me the message I wasn't going to be racing in the classic sprint, which I could have already probably assumed, but they said, you know, prepare for the 10K skate. We'll see, you know, where things are at, and hopefully we'll have a start there because there's a lot of girls who are good at skate races. And so I said, okay. And so I really made the calculated decision not to race very much between when I found out, which was kind of mid-January, through the races themselves, which were almost late February. And so that's a big chunk of time. But yeah. I knew that if I had that block of training, that, you know, having the opportunity to peak for one race with such a big block beforehand was really, that's huge benefit. That doesn't happen all the time. And so going into that day, I was really confident in my training and my preparation. And I was telling this with someone just yesterday, is that there's this moment after you start a race, or at least for me, where the first couple of seconds, you're not really, you know, you're focused on the race, you're focused on your technique. But for me, I'm not really worried about anything other than how do my skis feel. And I remember in those first couple of strides, kind of checking in and doing what I always do and saying, you know, all right, how do my skis feel? And I remember saying to myself, they feel awesome. It's go time. And those are like the last thoughts I remember thinking, other than like, you know, harder, faster, stronger. And I just kind of put my head down and went. And, you know, finishing the race, I knew it was a good race, but I was so early starting that I had no real splits out there other than I was leading the race. You know, it was a super good effort. I felt great. I really keyed the course the way I wanted to. I had been spending, you know, hours and hours studying the profile and studying the snow conditions and studying, you know, where I'd lost time the previous year in the World Cup that I did there. And so I knew I executed it exactly how I wanted. And that's just a great feeling, and that's kind of what I always ask of myself when I'm racing, is to kind of evaluate the race before the final results. You know, before I look at them, and I kind of make, you know, my decision based on the results rather than the effort. And so I was really happy with the effort. And so I went and I sat in the leader's chair. I was so excited. I asked Brian to come and take a quick photo so that we could, you know, send it back home and to show, you know, that I was leading the world champs for, you know, I didn't know how long it was going to be. I had Keegan starting behind me, so I thought for the moment. And a long time went by, and the guy who led me to the chair had asked if I wanted to change my outfit. And I said, "Oh no, I'll be fine. I'll just sit here in my race suit." So I sat there in my race suit with my bib still on, just waiting, trying to just soak in as much as I could of being, you know, being in the leader chair. And then I got pretty cold, and I realized, wow, I've been sitting in this chair a long time, and I heard the crowd, you know, I saw really, really, you know, strong skiers coming in and not quite getting my time, and I thought, wow, this is a really good race. And I remember the crowd just giving out this huge roar, and I looked up at the big screen, and I saw Charlotte Kalla climbing up Mortebachen, and I thought, oh, that's really cool, and everyone was cheering for her. And I looked down in the left-hand corner, and there was my name. It said C. Greg and my time. I thought, man, why are they comparing my time to Charlotte Collis? And then that's when it set in, and I was a little speechless for a bit, and I was thinking, whoa, this is incredible. And then they quickly panned to Jessie, and they said, you know, Jessie was 0.7 from my time at one point, and, you know, she had a little bit to go, and I knew Jessie was a good finisher, and I just saw her, you know, gritting her teeth and just powering into the finish line. And she crossed the line, and she was ahead of me. I knew if they were comparing Charlotte to me that, you know, I had a good race. And then when Jessie passed me, I knew she had a good race, so I ran out, and I gave her a big hug, and I told her, the first thing I said to her was, "You just had an incredible day." And I don't know if she remembers that, but she kind of came to and gave me a hug. And then I went on to go change. And I remember when I came back out from the changing room, people said that, you know, our results were still standing. And I thought, oh, well, what does that mean? And they said, you know, two Americans are in the medals. And then it was just the coolest feeling I could ever describe. I mean, that was such a big historic moment. And, you know, it feels like it happened so fast, and also at the same time, like it was you know, the longest 45 minutes of my life. It was a pretty incredible moment. And, you know, the wax techs and the coaches and the rest of the staff were just so excited. And, one thing I learned after that experience is, a long day of just one exciting moment after the next, as soon as you finish and find out you're on the podium. We had a lot of media. We had a lot of, you know, media press arrangements. We had different photo shoots and different, drug testing and different ceremonies. And, the whole day was such a blur. And I remember thinking all I wanted was everyone in the U.S. to wake up and just, and, you know, look at the screen and, It certainly started to happen, and it was pretty awesome. I think Brian and I said we couldn't fall asleep till about 2 in the morning because we just kept getting so many fun messages and hearing so much cool news from back home.
What a day it was. Yeah. Oh, and I can only imagine the tears of joy at a formal medal ceremony when they put the medals around both your and Jesse's necks, but so well deserved, Caitlin, and you've worked so hard for this, and to me, I mean, as I look at both of you, the future is really very bright, and you still got probably ways you can go and maybe still improve. And the sky's the limit, really.
I'm certainly excited. I feel great. I ended the season on a good note, and, I'm healthy and have a lot of energy. And, I don't see why, I have any hesitation or limits to keep racing at this point. We're having a great time. We love what we do. Here in Minneapolis with our Boys and Girls program. We love what we do with Moffitt Nordic Racing, and we're going to kind of keep the dream going.
Caitlin, and that's one thing, our time is short now, but it's one thing I did want to ask you a little bit. Both you and Brian devote an awful lot of time to good works for young children in the Twin Cities area. Can you just give us kind of an overview of what you do there?
Yeah. This has been something, we've both been a part of this program for about 8 years, and we work with an organization called In the Arena that puts elite athletes together with at-risk youth. And so we work right now. We currently work with the Boys and Girls Club in North Minneapolis. It's called the Jerry Gamble Boys and Girls Club.
Mm-hmm.
And our program has been based on mentorship and us becoming role models for these kids. And what we found was, rather than going in and just playing with them, which is incredibly valuable, and, spending time with them, which is incredibly valuable, we could actually construct somewhat of a curriculum that they could even get more from. And so what we've decided is to start a running club with the kids. And the results of that have been phenomenal. We've had, so far, just in this year alone, we have over 58 kids. We're only in the third week of the program at this point because we've been home 3 weeks. 58 kids have joined and have run at least 3 miles because that's the criteria to join the club. And as a group, I'm sure we're way over 250 miles at this point. And so it's looking good that we're on track for over 1,000 miles this year of these kids' effort and enthusiasm. And they, they range in age from 5 to, I think the oldest at this point is about 12 or 13. And so, it's a great program. And actually, it's a huge, huge inspiration for us to see what these kids give every day that we show up. And it's something that I think has greatly helped our racing. When we're spending long weeks over in Europe and maybe the races aren't going as planned, it's nice because there's something else that, is a passion and something else that you can kind of draw from that keeps you excited. So this is one of my favorite times of year, coming back home and getting to work with these kids. So, yeah, it's been a great journey for us, and I think we'll always enjoy working with kids and hopefully keep going for the rest of our lives.
Oh, that's great. Well, Caitlin, I want to thank you very much, and also to Brian for talking with us today. Admire you both very much, and wishing you a great summer, and we'll look forward to seeing you when ski season rolls around again. But thank you very much, and my best to both of you. All right.
You bet, Peter.
This is Peter.
Thanks again for touching base, and we're excited. We'll hopefully get to talk to you again soon.
Absolutely. I hope so. Thank you so very much. This is Peter Graves. It's another edition of Talking with the Gravy Train. So long.